Thank you for joining me for another episode of Law and Religion Down Under, a podcast devoted to covering the interactions of law and religion in the South Pacific. Each episode features a guest from across the range of religious and political ideologies. I'm your host, Jeremy Patrick. Last year, when the results of the recent census were released, we learned just how quickly the religious makeup of Australia is changing. Less than half of Australians now identify as Christian, while the percentage of those who claim no religion at all has increased dramatically. Will these trends continue? Today's episode is a conversation with Adam Possemai, professor of sociology at Western Sydney University and the author of a new book titled Religion and Change in Australia. Professor Possemai, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you, Jeremy, and looking forward to your questions.
Well, I thought maybe we'd start with just a little bit about the recent census results. One of the things that I saw in your book is you talk about, depending on how we look at it, we could plausibly describe Australia as Christian, we could describe it as post-Christian, or we could describe it as non-religious. What do you mean by that, and what does the census tell us about what Australia looks like religious in terms of religious demographics?
Yes, and thank you for reading my book and presenting it, and the results of it. Indeed, we can interpret the census according to the three different interpretations. And they live side by side, because we do have a decline of Christianity. And that's why we can speak about Australia being a post-Christian society, in which we see the decline of Christianity. And that happens in many Western countries. And the latest census in 2021 saw Christianity declining to 44% in Australia. And that's been accelerated. If we go back to an analysis that was done by the Pew Research Center in the United States, they did an analysis of the demographics around the world. And in 2010, they predicted that by 2050, Australia will reach 47%. The latest census in 2021 showed that Australia reached 44%. So there's a decline of Christianity in Australia. But alongside the decline of Christianity, we've got an increase of non-Christian religion. And the latest census indicates that it was around 10%. And it's progressively growing. So that's why we can speak about Australia as a post-Christian religion, because the numbers of Christians are declining and the non-Christian religions are growing. But Australia is still a Christian country. Because Christianity as a group, 44%, is still the largest group in Australia. It's followed by the no religion, which is 39%. So some people will read the census and claim that Australia, according to the census, remains a Christian Christian country, because the large majority of the population is in a Christian group, even if it's still in decline. But someone who will look from another perspective and will see the increase of the no-religion will argue that Australia is a no-religious country because of the sharp increase that's happening. And those three perspectives are working hand in hand in Australia.
That's fascinating. Okay. And one of the things, I'm an outsider to Australia, and one of the things that I don't think I realized is how differently distributed religious affiliation is depending on state or territory that one lives, that the different states have very different religious makeups. So I'm in Queensland, which I learned from your book is a much more religious state than if we take Victoria, I guess, or Tasmania as a counterexample. So I found that really interesting. To try and realize that there's not a homogenous spread across the country of religion and non-religion, and also, of course, an urban and a rural divide, which I am familiar with from the United States context, I suppose. I wonder if we could talk in a little bit more detail about the three categories we've mentioned: Christianity, other religions, and then those who identify as none, or the religious nuns. Within Christianity, are there major differences between denominations on which are shrinking, or are there some that are even growing?
Yes, there's been, and we have to go back to the history of Australia. And Australia, since Federation, Has been a Christian country. Christianity is written in the constitution, if this, even if there's separation from the church and the state. But it's non-sectarian. There's been a division between church and state to make sure that non-Christian denomination becomes a state religion, for example. And at that time, the majority of Christians tended to be Anglicans. But over the years, we've seen the proportion of Anglican in Australia decreasing and that of Catholics increasing. And that's due to migration factors that happened after the Second World War, when we saw some waves of migration from certain countries where you've got a Catholic population coming to Australia, whereas before the Second World War, it tended to come from countries with a majority of Anglicans, although there were still some Catholics migrating. And this started to shift. But we've seen from recent years that the proportion of Anglicans, of Catholics, is decreasing. And over the years, we've seen an increase of the Pentecostals in the census.
I wanted to ask you about the Pentecostal sort of increase, because
yes.
I've read a lot in the media about it. And I think maybe part of it was because of Prime Minister, former Prime Minister Scott Morrison's membership in Pentecostalism. But I think it's still a relatively small percentage of Australia's religious makeup of a whole. I'm not sure if it's in the sort of 1 to 4% range, somewhere along those.
Yes.
Why has Pentecostalism gained so much sort of media attention in recent years?
Yes, it's still a small percentage when you look at the figures, but at least up until the 2016 census, it was the only Christian denomination that was growing in Australia. And it's really a religion that's focus on presenting their faith in terms of the everyday life of people, especially the youth, and that attracts some people to attend the church services or the involvement in the groupings.
Okay, fascinating.
And it's really and the use of popular culture of media is very important as well.
Okay, and so that's drive helped them thrive when some other religious groups have started to shrink in recent decades. Interesting.
That could be one factor, but
one factor.
There's different factors to speak about, of course.
Right.
Yes.
And when we turn our attention to other religions, I know you've written a lot about Islam and Sharia law and Islamophobia. How has Islam fared in the census? Are the numbers growing or sort of staying stable?
Yes, the numbers in Islam are growing, and in the latest census in 2021, it represented 3.2% of the population, and it's close to, if I remember well, 800,000 people now. And over the years, this has grown through migration pattern, but also through demographic patterns as well, and conversion as well. Yes.
Okay.
Same with Buddhism. There's been a growth in Buddhism. There's been a growth in Hinduism as well.
And then for the third category is one I'm very interested in, because I've done some research on the topic, the so-called religious nuns, or
yes.
Some of them identify as spiritual but not religious. I guess what do they mean by that? In other words, not every religious nun is an atheist. So what falls within that category?
Indeed, it's a very broad category, and we have to think about what does the census tell us. The census tells us what a person has put on the form, but not the thinking process before putting the information on the form. So when people put no religion, why do they put no religion? It can be for various reasons. There can be some people who are not interested in religion at all, and they don't consider themselves religious. Or they will be atheists or agnostics and will put it in the form. Now, in the form allows people to tick no religion, but also others. And there are some people who on the census form will take the step to put atheism or agnosticism. the numbers of those are very small because someone will likely put no religion, thinking that I'm not religious. But what does it mean to have no religion? Does it mean that you don't believe in anything, or that you've got some sense of beliefs, but they're not part of a group? And that's why there's this great expression from the sociologist of religion from England, Grace Davey, who spoke about believing without belonging. Some people believe in something, but don't necessarily feel that they belong to a group. And they might be spiritual. I might put no religion, thinking that I don't belong to a group. And as such, I don't want to be identified as a Catholic, as an Anglican, for example, but I believe in something, but I don't belong to that group. And you've got some people in that no religious category who might be considered as spiritual. That is, they believe in something, but it's more a belief that's connected to the individual and not necessarily related to a larger grouping. So when we speak about no religion, it doesn't always mean that people are a-religious, that they don't believe at all. It's just a category that reflects the fact that people don't want to be represented as part of a religious group.
Right. And so maybe it would it'd be useful for us to think about religion in broader terms than just sort of mainstream traditional religion,
Yes.
and include spirituality
Yes.
as perhaps that
And
within that concept.
the same as well with the religious category. We've seen an increase in census of people who put Christianity as their religion rather than denominations such as Anglicanism or Catholicism. They see themselves as Christian without belonging to a specific group. And we see that sense of representation for some people. So although we've got some categories that we've been working with, there's a change happening among people in the way they feel about their religion and the way they feel about belonging to certain groups.
Okay. And now I guess with the caveat that it's always hard to predict the future, do you expect these trends to continue? If we imagine the census in 2030, is it likely we'll see fewer Christians than now, more religious nones than now? What do you see the future looking like?
Yes, and if you look at the surveys that have been done among the young generations, we can see that the young generation is even less Christian and more non-religious than older generations. So as we go over the years in Australia, I predict that the percentage of Christianity is going to decline, that of non-religion is going to increase, and the other, the non-Christian religions, are going to increase as well. What will be the pattern? It's not clear at this stage. But certainly, I can see the progress of the non-religions. We've seen this happening over the previous census. But again, is that what does non-religion mean? And to refine that process, it would be good to include extra categories such as spirituality. But again, the word spirituality can mean different things for different people. Some people will say that I'm spiritual, but that I'm not religious, or others will say I'm spiritual and I'm religious. So I belong to a religious group, but I feel I'm spiritual as well. So again, it's just what words to use to really fine-tune those categories can be very difficult.
Right. Okay. And if we try and place Australia in a sort of global context, one of the things you mentioned in your book I found fascinating is you say the growth of religion will happen around Australia, but not within it. Could you explain a little bit more about what you meant by that?
Yes, and here I rely on the research conducted at the Pew Research Center on the demographics around the world. And Australia, as well as many European countries, will see an increase of the non-religion, a decrease of Christianity. But outside in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America, we'll see an increase of religion. And Australia, where it's located, will be surrounded by an increase of religion in the region. Whereas within Australia, we'll see an increase of no religion, according to the analysis that they conducted. So it's very important in Australia, even if the no religious is increasing, that we still keep a strong knowledge of what's happening. And
Okay.
that's why scholars like you and I are doing some work in that sphere, just not only about Australia, but about Australia's relationship with other countries and about the globe.
I know you're a sociologist, and so I was wondering if we could talk about secularization theory or
Yes,
desecularization
yeah,
theory.
yeah, yes.
Emil Durkheim and others very early in the 20th century sort of predicted a gradual lessening of religious affiliation across the world, I guess, with the rise of reason and technology and things like that. And we know from other sociologists and other work done, I guess, most prominently in the 1980s and 90s, that doesn't seem to be the case. The secularization theory, as a sort of broad brush approach, doesn't seem to hold water. But I wonder, I guess, maybe just playing devil's advocate, we do see in the advanced industrialized West a real decline in religious affiliation. If you think of Australia, of course, or if you look at Britain today, the percentages of religious affiliation have just declined dramatically. So I wonder, in your mind, is there perhaps some validity to secularization theory, or is it really we have to treat each country sort of on its own and we shouldn't make any generalizations?
Yeah, so it's I tend to give a 2 hour lectures on this, Jeremy, but I'll try to summarize. But the evolution of the notion of secularization has gone through various phases. And as you mentioned, with the work of Durkheim, Max Weber, for example, they were expecting religion to disappear. But then sociologists of religion and other social scientists started to refine that concept and saw that religion wasn't disappearing, it was just moved away from the public sphere. That is, it wasn't discussed in parliament, and it was more discussed at family table, or it was more of the private life of people. And the notion of secularization started to shift from religion still existing, but being privatized. But then over the years, with different events that happened at the end of the last century, we saw religions coming back in the public sphere. And religion guiding people in their political decision. And that's why the new term post-secularism appear by Jean-Claude Habermas, that religion is now in the public sphere, and what we need to work on is how religious groups can speak to each other in the public sphere, but speak to non-religious groups as well. So how can we have this dialogue that helps to build a strong society that involves that types of debate in the public sphere? This is the notion of post-secularism, in which we see, even if there's a decline of religion in Australia, for example, we see religion more present in the public sphere than it was years ago. But you speak about specificities. Each country can be quite specific in the way they handle religion, secularization, and post-secularization. Some countries have included religion right from the beginning of the modernization process. The secularization in Australia, and I mentioned the notion of I mentioned sectarism in Australia at the time of federation. That was a type of secularized version in Australia when they created federation, wasn't to relegate religion away from public sphere as such, but making sure that no denomination has control over other Christian denominations. So when Australia created federation as a Christian country, they make sure that no denomination had power over others. And that's a specific type of secularism in Australia. And if you look at the work that was being done at that time, they were trying to revitalize religion in Australia, almost like a model from America, moving away from a model of Europe, where we could see the decline of religion in Europe, but the increase of religion in America around the time of Federation. So each country can be quite different. For example, in Europe, for example, there were a secularization increase, and the notion of freedom became quite different. It was a freedom from religion because of the whole history that happened in Europe. But with regards to the, and of course I'm generalizing, in America that has a different history, the notion of freedom became a freedom of religion and went through a different type of secularization process. But a secularization process that is linked with the notion of modernization. Coming back to those early thinkers that you mentioned, Jeremy, like Durkheim, there was this idea that modernization process can't happen with religion. That modernization process, with the increase of urbanization, the increase of scientific knowledge, the increase of education, religion will disappear. and that will lead to a stronger modernization process during the, and that was a third during the industrialization time. But we've seen some countries, such as Malaysia, for example, that went through a modernization process, but by including religion. So each country has basically worked on the modernization process with the understanding of what is secularization and work towards so specific goals. And each country, of course, have a social memory. That is, there's a history in all the in each country, a history of the way they've been handling religion in the public and private sphere. And everything that happens, of course, is a flow-on effect to what has happened in the past. So we
Okay.
do have that long history that's part of the social memory. So in Australia, for example, because the constitution was built in a sense that religion could never be part of the public sphere. We see this discussions happening. Yes.
Okay. It's fascinating, I guess, from that perspective, to think that so much of a country's religious demographics go to, as you say, sort of that deep memory and very early influences of on the country, including early immigration patterns and things like that. But simultaneously, how quickly religious affiliations can change from a statistical perspective. From today to 30 years ago, just how quickly Australia has changed. So it's sort of both at the same time, the deep history and rapid changes, which is very fascinating sort of situation.
And the world policies tries to adapt themselves. So, for example, after the Second World War, when we see this increase of migration to Australia, the government of that time was quite secularist and expected the migrants to come outside of Australia to become secular coming to Australia. If they were religious before they arrive, as soon as they a few years later after they arrived to Australia, they expected them to become secular because they thought that Australia was becoming more secular at that time. What happened was different. Many people who migrated felt isolated in Australia, isolated from their culture of origin, and so they find many groupings of people like them sharing the culture around a church, a mosque, a synagogue, and that's where they started to be able to connect with people from their own culture. And we've seen some patterns of people becoming more religious, coming to Australia because of the linked to the community of origin in Australia. And we see those, and this has affected the way that we've been trying to understand patterns of migration to Australia and trying to understand the notion of multiculturalism in Australia, including now this vastly diverse landscape in Australia that includes so many different religions.
Okay. And I guess maybe just to wrap up, I know your time is very valuable this morning. Is there something that sort of the media or sort of common wisdom gets wrong about religion and patterns of religious affiliation or change that you think that we should be aware of?
Again, it's what we should be aware is to be very reflective in how we understand religion and what happens. Religion can mean different things for different people. And there's various patterns happening in Australia. We've recently seen what happened with the religious discrimination bill and the way religion was conceived and the way the notion of freedom was conceived as well. So we need to do more research on what's happening and understand a bit more the players that are trying to influence the way we understand religion and especially the notion of freedom.
Okay, great. Well, that's a great note to leave on. Thank you so much for appearing on the show, Adam.
Thank you, Jeremy.
And that's it for this episode of Law and Religion Down Under. But if you'd like to learn more about Professor Postma's work, there will be links in the episode notes. Feedback or topic and guest suggestions are always welcome by emailing me at jeremy.patrick@usq.edu.au. I'll be back in 2 months with another episode. Thanks for listening.